This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. When Brian Stewart discovered a new species of newt, he did what any self-respecting scientist would do. He published the results in a scientific journal. He hoped the knowledge of the newt's existence would spur conservation efforts. Instead, his work attracted the interest of people who specialize in the wild animal pet trade. Soon, his newts were being sold all around the world as pets, and now they're threatened with extinction. This captures the thorny problem that confronts the scientific world. How do we release important knowledge without it being used for not-so-good purposes? We have Brian Stewart with us. He's curator of herpetology at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. He is here with us. Brian, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Let's start from the beginning. What did you discover and where?
Well, this was in Laos, the Southeast Asian country of Laos, a new species of newt, which is a salamander. And this was an animal that was very unusual in its external appearance from any other known salamander. It's a very large newt, very warty, and of particular relevance, very colorful. It has sort of yellowish-tan stripes on its back and bright orange-red spots on its belly. And it's in its external appearance, it was very, very unusual, and it was very rare because it was we discovered it and concluded that it occurred only in a very small geographic area.
And when we say new species, we mean new to science, not new to the world, and certainly not new to that part of the world.
That's exactly right. When we're talking about new species, we're talking about new species to science. So it's entered the consciousness of science. But, of course, it's a species that's been around on the planet for, in this case, probably several million years, and is a species that was very well known to local people who live in the same geographic area that the newt does.
And you did what any good scientist would do. You made it known to the rest of the world by publishing in a scientific journal, right?
That's exactly right. Myself and a colleague, we went through the traditional procedure of giving this thing a formal scientific name and describing what it looked like and how it differed from all other known species of newts and salamanders. And most importantly, we told in great detail where it occurred in Laos.
So that's all good. We've found out about a species science didn't know about. This can help in a lot of different ways. And you're hoping to some extent that this can help in conservation efforts.
That's exactly right. This species was the first species of salamander known from the country of Laos. So we thought it was a very exciting discovery. I gave it a scientific name. The species name is Laoensis, which means, in Latin, it means found in Laos. In other words, I was trying to draw attention to the fact that this species is a unique piece of the natural heritage of Laos, and I thought it was something that would attract the attention of the government of Laos, the Department of Forestry, which is responsible for conserving biodiversity in that country. And I wanted them to appreciate just how special this thing was.
And that may have happened, but it also attracted the attention of exotic pet collectors.
That's exactly right. And this was the big shock for me and a real eye-opening experience. What had happened was we published this species description in a scientific journal, a journal that very, very is commonly used by other herpetologists, such as myself, to describe new species. And so we put it out there into the scientific literature. We put all the available information we had about the newly discovered species into this paper. And then what ended up happening was people who had an interest in this species, not for its biological uniqueness, but rather because of the opportunity for them to make money off of it. And what happened was a demand was created in the international pet trade for this thing because it was so unusual looking, such a large, warty, colorful, and rare species. People wanted it in an aquarium in their home. And as a result, people who specialize in commercial collecting of wildlife, particularly amphibians and reptiles, in this case, these were commercial collectors from the countries of Japan and Germany initially, who used the published scientific description as essentially a roadmap, as a treasure map, to go to Laos and to go to, at that time it was known only from three localities that were very nearby each other, and to go to those localities and to collect as many as they could possibly find, and with the help of local people, for the purposes of taking those newts out of the country of Laos illegally and selling them back in Europe and Japan.
How did you find out about it?
Well, I found out about it several different ways. I started receiving emails from people. One of the early ones was, you know, I've just purchased some of these animals and I'd like to ask you some questions about what you know about its where it occurs in the wild so that I know how to properly keep them in these aquariums. And those kind of questions started coming in. And then other people started tipping me off saying, you know, these animals are now coming into wildlife importers, into dealers' premises in Germany and Japan and so on, and they're being offered for sale in fairly large numbers. Are you aware of this? And so what I started doing was doing internet searches. And because people who buy and sell this kind of thing actually use the internet now to buy and sell their wares. Mm. And so it was all right there, right on the internet.
So what's happened to the newt population?
Well, this is a very good question. What we know, so the first thing that was apparent to me was that we needed to get some information fast about what was happening on the ground. What actually was the scale of this trade? Was it just a few animals that were being taken out, something that, you know, would probably be negligible offtake, or was this really large scale? Does this new trade demand pose a real threat to the sustainability of these populations? And so it was very clear to me we needed some more information than what I was able to provide in the original species description. So the first thing I did was try to seek out a person who could spend considerable periods of time on the ground in the range of the species in Laos to learn about its aspects, all aspects of its biology, where it occurs, what kinds of habitat it lives in, what does it eat, how does it breed, and relevant to this story, how many are being harvested and why. And it became obvious to me that the best person to do this kind of work would be a Lao national. Now, one of the reasons why we continue to discover so many new species of amphibians and reptiles in Laos is because historically, Laos has never actually had a national herpetologist, has never had a scientist with expertise in amphibians and reptiles. So I realized there was no in-country expert I could go to about this problem, but rather we had to start at the very beginning. And this is something, actually, if you had to ask me what it is about my career that I'm most proud of, it is what I'm about to tell you now. And that was I went out and sought a student, somebody, a young person who was interested in doing a graduate degree, who is from the country of Laos, who would like to focus on the biology and conservation of this particular species for his or her thesis. And I found the perfect student. And what she went ahead and she spent the better part of 2 years, actually, learning everything she could possibly learn about these newts. And that included harvesting. Who's harvesting them, how many, and for what purposes. And what we now know is we have concluded that our original hypothesis that the species is restricted to a very small geographic area is true. We have been able to add a few more localities within that small geographic area, but there aren't very many. And what we have learned is that at every one of its known localities, every place that we know it to occur, there is heavy harvesting pressure for it.
So there's heavy, but you don't quite have the numbers, but you know it's pretty intense.
No, the reason why we don't have specific numbers is the harvesting is coming in two forms. One is where we have foreigners are coming to Laos and visiting these localities where the species is known to occur and harvesting the species themselves, but especially what they're doing, what has happened as a result of this newly created demand for the species in the international pet trade, is that trade networks have been set up using local people who live in that area to go out and harvest as many as they can. And we learned, my student learned a number of different things. She picked up stories like this foreign national would visit this village twice a year. And he would say to the local people, I will come back on such and such date, and at that time I will buy from you every newt that you can offer to me. And then these local people would then report stories to us about the numbers of animals that they would sell. Now, they didn't have specific numbers of individuals, but they would report things to us, for example, the number of buckets that filled with live newts that they would sell, or even how many kilograms of live newts they would sell. And we estimated from the kind of information that they were able to provide to us that they were, you know, in one go, they would sell hundreds and hundreds of individuals to some of these commercial collectors.
And, of course, you don't know what the baseline is. You don't know what you started with.
That's exactly right. She has done some what we call mark recapture studies, which is where you can go out and you can estimate population size. And she was able to do that in one of the streams where we know it to occur within. So within the stream, the newt is not distributed uniformly throughout the stream, but rather it's quite patchy. It only occurs in certain parts of the stream where the stream flow and depth is right. And in those pockets where they actually occur, they can be quite abundant. So they're locally very abundant, but across that landscape quite rare. So if you find specifically where they occur, you can in very short order find a fairly large number, and you can harvest them quite easily. One of the unfortunate aspects of the biology of this newt is, unlike most other salamanders, not all, but unlike most, these animals are very active during the day, and they're fairly conspicuously colored. Like I mentioned before, they have these yellowish tan stripes on their back, and you can actually stand, once you find where in which stream actually has this species and where in that stream it occurs, you can actually stand on the bank of the stream, and right in the day you can see them walking on the bottom of the stream. So unfortunately, they're very well known to local people, and they're therefore very easy to harvest. And you can go into one of these pockets that has them and in very short order catch every single
individual.
Pretty
much get everyone. And what kind of a price are they fetching?
Well, this is something, and with the commercial collectors that would purchase them from villagers were offering, it would vary, but they were offering approximately 20 to 25 U.S. cents an individual, something like that. Now, it depends on whether they were selling them by the kilo, by the bucket load, or by the individual. But in any case, just to give you some idea, it's about 20 to 25 U.S. cents. These animals, when they got back to Japan or to Europe or more recently to the United States, when they're being offered for sale, they're retailing at over $200
wow.
a piece. So a significant markup.
This leaves you scientists with a bit of a problem, doesn't it? The fact is, you know, you ratted these guys out, and yet you're doing your job. What does this mean now for publishing in the field of, particularly when it comes to uncovering new species?
Well, that's a very good question. And what I think is happening now is biodiversity scientists such as myself, who are tasked with the job of discovering new species and describing them as to science, now join the ranks for certain groups of organisms that we are describing as new to science that have commercial trade value. We are now joining the ranks of those scientists who struggle with what we call the dual use dilemma, which is where the same piece of scientific information can be used for both good and evil. Now, this is something that people who work in science that has application to, say, bioterrorism. This is something that scientists have been struggling with. So, for example, scientists who were working on sequencing the entire genome of anthrax were struggling with, what to do about releasing that kind of information, because their motivation was doing this for the good of science, but they realized that same information could fall into the hands of, say, a terrorist or a rogue state that would use that same piece of scientific information to harm others. Now, the analogy is in biodiversity science. Now we've got the problem where we want to publish this information for the good of the conservation of the species, but we don't want that same information to be used to inadvertently facilitate the exploitation and possible extinction of these commercially valuable
species.
How common
is that? I mean, it happened with you in the newt. Is it happening all over the place?
Well, very interesting. I was so personally upset about what had happened because I felt some sense of responsibility. Now, of course, it was unintentional. I was horrified that this was the outcome of describing this newt, the Lao newt, as a new species to science. So I started checking in with colleagues, other herpetologists. These are biologists who study amphibians and reptiles, and they started sharing similar stories with me. And in fact, a couple of us teamed up, and we sort of summarized this experience in a letter to the editor of the journal Science, and we were seeking comments from the community at large about what it is we should do. And I have some ideas about some things that we might do to help, I wanted to start that conversation. So specific examples, I know. There is a species of turtle that was described to science from a small island in Indonesia called the Roti Island snake neck turtle, and it became worth over $2,000 a piece. Very, very rare turtle in the international pet trade, and that species is now considered to be extinct in the wild in Roti Island. It has literally been completely harvested out of the wild as a result of these demands. Some other examples that colleagues came up with were describing some rare and colorful geckos from China, gecko lizards. One of my colleagues told me a story about describing one of these new geckos from China. And today, the original locality, what we call a type locality, the original locality where the species was named from, the species no longer occurs there. That's a species that lives on and under rocks, and every single rock at that locality has been smashed to pieces or rolled by commercial collectors seeking to get these geckos.
So what do you do? Because you talked about the dual-use conundrum, and you mentioned anthrax, but very recently scientists were working with bird flu, and they essentially had to have their findings censored.
That's exactly right. The U.S. National Science Advisory Board, just this past fall of 2011, made some recommendations that some scientists in the United States and the Netherlands who were collaboratively working on what genetic mutations make bird flu highly transmissible among humans. They were working with those researchers and the journals Nature and Science to come up with some sort of recommendation for how to transmit the science, but at the same time to withhold enough detail so that that same information couldn't fall into the hands of, say, a terrorist or a rogue state. And those were recommendations. And in this case, my understanding in this case is that the researchers, the journals, and this U.S. National Science Advisory Board sort of worked very collaboratively. Everybody understood where each other was coming from, and though not everybody may be satisfied with a compromise, at least there was an open dialogue about what to do with this problem.
So what should you do? What do you think can be done?
So in the case of species description, which is where my expertise lies and where I can most safely comment, I think now what we need to do as scientists is to do exactly what it is that the commercial collectors are doing with us, and that is these commercial collectors are now monitoring scientific journals using the internet to find new rare species that are becoming known, and using those journals to find where they occur and to go and commercially exploit them. I think we also need to use the power of the internet to monitor what species are actually in commercial demand, and so that we have some a priori information about which groups of species are likely to be sought out commercially. And when we have a new species to describe that is a member of one of those groups, that we try our very best. It's not going to be a perfect solution, but we try our very best to coincide the publication of that new species description with some kind of in-country legislation that will protect that newly discovered species from commercial exploitation. So, for example, we now know that snake-neck turtles are commercially valuable. And we know that by monitoring how much and how much demand there is for these things and actually how much they're selling for. And some of the rare ones are getting thousands of dollars. And so we now know that if we were to discover a new species of snake-neck turtle, for example, it would be very unwise just to simply describe it as a new species and to throw that publication out there without trying to coincide it, for example, with some legislation to protect it.
Always very interesting. Brian, thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Brian Stewart is curator of herpetology at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. Coming up, live music from the Mipso Trio. Stay tuned.
Down this highway, burning out like a shooting star. So hurry up and say I do. Someday I'll be free. Hurry up and wait, wait for me. I said to hurry up and wait, wait for me.